Today is Thursday, November 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. China and the U.S. agree on global warming reduction targets in Glasgow.
On climate, cooperation is the only way to get this job done.
A top U.S. diplomat says the Biden administration is working with the African Union to try to end the violence in Ethiopia.
All sides see the dangers of perpetuating the conflict.
And four astronauts blast off into space. We'll have these stories and more next. At the climate talks in Glasgow, Scotland, the United States and China surprised observers with a joint declaration to develop long-term strategies to try and limit global warming below 1.5 degrees Celsius over the next decade. It comes as delegates enter the final hours of negotiations on a deal to slow global warming. Henry Ridgewell reports.
China and the United States are the world's two biggest polluters, and their future actions critical in the fight against climate change. So the two countries' joint declaration was welcomed at the COP26 summit Wednesday. U.S. climate envoy John Kerry.
The United States and China have no shortage of differences, but on climate, cooperation is the only way to get this job done. This is not a discretionary thing, frankly. This is science. It's math and physics that dictate the road that we have to travel.
China's chief climate negotiator, Xie Zhenhua, echoed John Kerry's sentiments.
In the area of climate change, there is more agreement between China and the U.S. than divergence, making it an area with huge potential for our cooperation.
Among the pledges were cooperation on controlling methane emissions, tackling illegal deforestation, enhancing renewable energy generation, and speeding up financial support for poorer nations. But the declaration did not include specific dates or targets. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres tweeted after the declaration, "Tackling the climate crisis requires international collaboration and solidarity, and this is an important step in the right direction." It has given new momentum to the negotiations as delegates try to agree on a final summit text by Friday, detailing how countries will limit global warming to no more than 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, the target set in Paris in 2015. Summit host Boris Johnson urged delegates to grasp the opportunity.
We're now finding things are tough, but that doesn't mean it's impossible. It doesn't mean that we can't keep 1.5 alive.
Delegates are also negotiating how much richer nations should pay developing countries to mitigate the effects of climate change and decarbonize their economies, a pledge first made in 2009. Again, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson.
And it's very frustrating to see countries that have spent 6 years conspicuously patting themselves on the back for signing that promissory note in Paris, quietly edging towards default now that vulnerable nations and future generations are demanding payment here now in Glasgow.
The first draft text published Wednesday urges countries to revisit and strengthen their emissions cutting targets before the end of 2022. It says rich countries should go beyond the pledge to pay poorer nations $100 billion a year. And it calls on governments to phase out coal and fossil fuels, but with no fixed dates. Jennifer Morgan is the executive director of Greenpeace International.
Countries need to commit to actually come back to increase and strengthen their targets and their actions. That's clearly one thing. The text does include that coal will be phased out and fossil fuel subsidies will be phased out. I think optimally you would have dates by which time they would be phased out, but it's important that they're there.
With their joint declaration, observers say the United States and China have given added impetus to the summit. The coming hours will show whether the international community can agree on how to halt catastrophic global warming. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the U.S. is in close contact with Nigeria's former president, who is leading the effort on behalf of the African Union to mediate an end to the deadly violence in Ethiopia. Blinken expressed hope on Wednesday that diplomacy would succeed in halting the war in Ethiopia after major rebel advances.
All sides see the dangers of perpetuating the conflict. There is an opportunity, I hope, for everyone to pull back, to sit down, to get a halt to what's happening on the ground, and ultimately to produce a ceasefire, to have access for humanitarian assistance, and over time to negotiate a more durable political resolution.
Tigrayan rebels have moved closer to Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa, in recent days and have joined forces with other armed groups 1 year after an offensive in the northern region, which was in response to an attack on the army. Ukraine's foreign minister has held strategic security talks in Washington with the U.S. Secretary of State. The meeting comes as Ukraine's defense ministry reports that about 90,000 Russian troops have been positioned along their common border and in rebel-controlled parts of eastern Ukraine. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Ukraine celebrated the 30th anniversary of its independence from the Soviet Union in late August. But experts say Russia still poses a major security threat, with some 90,000 Russian troops now deployed near the two countries' common border for the second time this year. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken welcomed Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba to the State Department Wednesday and assured him that American support is ironclad. Blinken had this message for Russian President Vladimir Putin.
We don't have clarity into Moscow's intentions, but we do know its playbook. And our concern is that Russia may make the serious mistake of attempting to rehash what it undertook back in 2014, when it amassed forces along the border, crossed into sovereign Ukrainian territory, and did so claiming falsely that it was provoked.
Kuleba said Russian aggression against Kyiv will only end once Ukraine is a fully established member of Western organizations. Ukraine wants to join NATO, which Moscow strongly opposes, just as it opposes these joint Ukraine-NATO military exercises, calling them a security threat to Russia. Kuleba said American and Western support deters Russian aggression. And he told VOA's Ukraine service that Russia is also using energy as a weapon against Ukraine and Europe. And he called on Germany to act.
The energy crisis that Russia has created in the European Union market is the use of gas as a weapon. We remember very well the joint statement of the United States and Germany. If Russia begins to use energy as a weapon, Germany will take decisive action. We are grateful to Germany for its consistent support of Ukraine, but what is actually happening?
With fighting between Ukrainian forces and Russian-backed separatists continuing in eastern Ukraine, this is a crucial time for security talks between Blinken and Kuleba, former Ambassador William Taylor told VOA.
The Russian leadership has made some troubling statements recently over the past couple of months, indicating that they don't think Ukraine's a real nation, and that's pretty threatening. It's pretty provocative on the part of the Russians. So this is a good time for the United States and Ukraine to coordinate and to develop plans and reinforce the ties between the United States and Ukraine.
Taylor told VOA that the last time Russia amassed troops near its border with Ukraine earlier this year, President Joe Biden pushed back hard, and Putin withdrew most of the troops, but not all the equipment. Biden welcomed Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky to the White House in September as another strong show of support. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Ignition. And liftoff.
Four astronauts blasted off from Florida's Kennedy Space Center aboard a SpaceX Crew Dragon. The astronauts, three Americans and one German, are expected to rendezvous and dock with the ISS Thursday night for a six-month stay. The quartet's initial launch date in late October was delayed due to weather concerns and an undisclosed illness of one of the crew members. This is the third official operational crew and the fourth overall to fly to the International Space Station aboard a SpaceX Crew Dragon since last May. Pakistan is hosting the United States, Russia, and China for talks on Afghanistan. AP correspondent Charles Day Ledesma reports.
Pakistan's hosting talks on the path forward for Afghanistan, where a deepening humanitarian crisis has forced many to migrate since the Taliban takeover in August. Pakistan's joined by special envoys from the US, Russia and China, while the Afghan foreign minister will meet with his Pakistani counterpart later. The participants of the Troika Plus meeting are expected to issue an appeal for the world community to urgently provide humanitarian aid to the Afghan people. They also are set to urge the Taliban to respect human and women's rights and to ensure an inclusive government. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Carol Van Dam. In Poland, security forces have been tasked with securing the nation's eastern border amid a migration flight with neighboring Belarus, while also protecting the capital and other cities during Independence Day marches organized by far-right groups. Poland has objected since the summer to the rising number of migrants trying to enter the country from Belarus. The standoff intensified this week as a large number of asylum seekers camped out at the border. Thousands of migrants and refugees in Belarus have been trying to cross into the European Union through Poland. The EU alleges Belarus is encouraging the migrants in an attempt to divide EU states in response to EU sanctions against the country's authoritarian leader. Former South African President F.W. de Klerk has died. De Klerk shared the Nobel Peace Prize with Nelson Mandela and oversaw the end of South Africa's racist apartheid government. In 1990, de Klerk announced to South Africa's parliament that Mandela would be released from prison after 27 years. His foundation confirmed on Thursday de Klerk died of cancer at his home in Cape Town. He was 85. Leaders of China's ruling Communist Party are paving the way for President Xi Jinping to extend his rule. Central Committee members praised Xi's ideology as the essence of Chinese culture as they wrapped up a leadership meeting. Xi has amassed more personal authority than any Chinese leader since Deng Xiaoping in the 1980s. He is expected to take up a third five-year term as party general secretary. In the U.S. state of Wisconsin, Kyle Rittenhouse testified in his murder trial that he tried to get away from his pursuers the night he shot three people, killing two of them during street unrest in the city of Kenosha. He told jurors that he didn't do anything wrong and that he was defending himself. The demonstrations in August 2020 happened after a white police officer shot a black man, Jacob Blake. More than 11,000 refugees, including 6,600 children, have entered Uganda since Sunday night, fleeing escalating violence in North Kivu's Rutshuru territory in the Democratic Republic of Congo. About 8,000 of the refugees crossed into Uganda at Bunagana, and 3,000 more crossed at two small towns southwest of Uganda's capital, Kampala. Samuel Mukirani is the emergency response manager for Save the Children in Uganda. Mukirani tells me that the vast majority of refugees are women and children who are in urgent need of assistance.
Following the huge influx of refugees into Uganda on Sunday night and an eventual meeting between the DRC and Uganda's security forces, where the DRC security forces reassured their citizens of calm and safety returning to the locations that had been affected by the armed conflict in Congo. So we have seen thousands of refugees returning to DRC.
Can you describe a little for our audience what is going on with the armed conflict? Who is involved in the conflict and why are they fighting?
Yes, as many of us are aware, North Kivu has had decades of insecurity and conflict. There are a number of militias in this location, particularly North Kivu, and the militias that are very active, like M23, the Mai Mai, the ADF, who make sporadic attacks on the communities. So at this point in time, there has been pointing fingers, accusations, and counter-accusations. So what I can say for now, it is not very clear who is behind the insurgency that occurred in this particular location.
How many deaths have been documented in this latest round of conflict? And are civilians involved? And are they dying at the hands of these forces?
From accounts of some of the refugees that we spoke to, there has been few deaths, varying from 3 to 5, but there are reports of injuries and other crimes against humanity that have occurred. But civil society organizations are on ground, both in Uganda and DRC, to identify the extent to which the rights of people have been abused.
As the emergency response manager there in Uganda, what can you tell us about the challenges that you're facing to try to assist all of these thousands of refugees?
Yes, while a number of refugees have returned, we still have quite a huge number, over 1,000, in a transit center called Nyakavande, 5 kilometers away from the border. And 63% of these are children, and they face dire need of basic facilities, including clothes, hot meals, and other basic necessities. So we, working together with UNHCR and the Office of the Prime Minister, to ensure that agencies can bring in all the basic needs that are required so that we can provide them support.
That was Samuel Mukirani, Emergency Response Manager for Save the Children in Uganda. He was speaking to me Thursday from Kampala. U.S. National Institutes of Health scientists played a major role in developing Moderna, Inc.'s COVID-19 vaccine, and the agency intends to defend its claim as co-owner of the patents on the shot, according to NIH Director Dr. Francis Collins on Wednesday. Reuters correspondent Brian Woods reports.
The U.S. National Institutes of Health intends to claim co-ownership over Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine patent. That's according to the agency's outgoing director, Dr. Francis Collins, who spoke to Reuters on Wednesday. He said NIH scientists significantly contributed to developing the mRNA vaccine.
I think Moderna has made a serious mistake here in not providing the kind of co-inventorship credit to people who played a major role in the development of the vaccine that they are now making a fair amount of money off of. And we did our best to try to resolve this amicably and ultimately failed, but we are not done.
The New York Times reported earlier this week that Moderna excluded 3 NIH scientists as co-inventors of the multi-billion dollar COVID-19 vaccine when the company applied for its patent over the summer. In a statement, Moderna acknowledged that the scientists played a substantial role in the vaccine's development, but the company added, quote, "We do not agree that NIH scientists co-invented claims to the mRNA 1273 sequence itself. Only Moderna's scientists came up with the sequence for the mRNA used in our vaccine." Moderna expects nearly $20 billion of sales in 2021 from the COVID-19 vaccine and up to $22 billion next year.
That was Reuters reporter Brian Woods. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers have spotted an accident. It's a brown dwarf located about 50 light years away. A brown dwarf was supposed to be a star, but was unable to gain enough mass to sustain the needed hydrogen fusion at its core to become a full-fledged star. The astronomers gave it its nickname because it was detected by accident and that it's not like any of the other brown dwarfs observed so far. A study published in the astrophysical journal Letters suggests the accident might be 10 billion to 13 billion years old, which is about double the average age of other known brown dwarfs. If it is that old, the astronomers say the accident could have formed early in our galaxy's history and have a different chemical makeup. If so, the scientists propose that there are probably many more of these ancient brown dwarfs nearby in the galaxy. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Damme. This is Armistice Day in many countries, the day marking the end of the First World War in 1918. In the U.S., the day is marked as Veterans Day, and people pay tribute to those who served in the U.S. military. First Lady Jill Biden honored the children of injured troops as hidden heroes. AP correspondent Sagar Magani has more.
For Veterans Day, First Lady Jill Biden is honoring the people she calls hidden heroes, the kids and caregivers of American troops.
My job is to give love and to bring light to my dad's day.
9-year-old Gabby Rodriguez and 6-year-old sister Ava do what they can for their father, a Marine who suffered a brain injury in Iraq.
I cook pancakes on Sundays, and my sister likes to ask, "How's the weather?" which is code for asking about his mood.
Dr. Biden says the sisters are examples of kids with a nearly impossible job, helping care for the sometimes invisible wounds of war.
From a young age, hidden helpers learn the costs of war close up.
Earlier this year, the White House launched a program called Hidden Helpers to support the kids of America's 5.5 million military caregivers.
Injuries can be felt throughout generations.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
Flags of Valor is a company that makes wooden American flags and provides employment for U.S. combat veterans. The company also raises money to support veteran assistance organizations. VOA's Deborah Block has that story.
Eric Wilson is cutting wood to be used for creating handcrafted wooden American flags at Flags of Valor in Winchester, Virginia. After serving in combat with the U.S. military in Iraq and Afghanistan, he says the American flag means a great deal to him.
Here in the U.S., we have the freedom to express whatever religion we want to practice, have freedom of speech, everything else. You have the freedom to express who you want to be. And that's how I see the American flag.
The craftsmen are veterans, including Jacob Young.
I fought for this flag.
Flags of Valor grew from a home project to a manufacturing company in 2015 that sells about 30,000 wooden flags of different sizes each year. Each one is a proud work of art by the veteran who puts their signature on it. Co-founder Brian Storz, a former Army paratrooper and Air Force Special Operations pilot, began crafting the flags at home as he recuperated from an injury during a deployment in Afghanistan.
What I found was it was very therapeutic, you know, taking raw materials and painting and sanding and turning it into something beautiful, especially, you know, the symbol of our country, which is the American flag.
Later, along with Joe Seamus, another Air Force pilot, Flags of Valor was born.
I think what's made us successful was our devotion from the very beginning to being made in America, to employing veterans, and to giving back.
He says Flags of Valor was founded on philanthropy first, and then profit. So far, the company has raised $1.5 million for veteran and first responder charities.
We do support charities that treat post-traumatic stress. We do support charities that support the families of the fallen. That's very important to us because oftentimes they're not getting all the support that they need.
Besides the typical red, white, and blue flag, there is also a black and white version.
That's the subdued flag. That's the black and white version that we sell that highlights those people that wore that flag in combat.
Storz appreciates the patriotism and sacrifice of the veterans, who he says make great employees.
I think the unique thing about having combat veterans is that, you know, Joe and I are also combat veterans, so we understand how everyone thinks.
Wilson appreciates the camaraderie that makes him feel at home.
You have that fraternity feeling in the military. This is, you know, that brotherhood feeling.
Deborah Block, VOA News, Winchester, Virginia.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of Nadia Taha and the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Carol Van Damme.